It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important story.
Socialization of transportation, education, energy, housing, and water. What it means is that government controls it through rules and regulations.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
Under this guise of bipartisanship and nonpartisanship, it's actually tapped down the truth.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
On an equal field in the battle of ideas, mistruths or misconceptions, and it is getting us into a world of hurt.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed, let's have a conversation, and welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Thank you so much for joining us. You're each treasured, you're valued, you have purpose. Today, strive for excellence. Take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. Live with intention. You were made for this moment. Happy day after Sunday, day before Tuesday. Producer Steve.
You got that down pretty good.
And thank you to you and this great team that I get to work with. And that's producer Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, Charlie, Jen, all the people here at Crawford Broadcasting. And really appreciate all of you as well. We've got a big show planned for you. So be sure and check out our website. That is Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You can email me at Kim@KimMunson.com as well. And thank you to all of you who support us. We are an independent voice as we search for truth and clarity, looking at these issues through this lens of freedom versus force, force versus freedom. If something is a good idea, you should not have to force people to do it. And it's never compassionate to take other people's rights, their property, their freedom, or their livelihood via force, whether it's with a weapon, policy, unpredictable and excessive taxation, fear, coercion, silent thief, government-induced inflation, or how about some of the bureaucrats in Australia that are trying to take away Novak Djokovic's opportunity to defend his titles to the Australian Open because they said he could not produce some documentation that they wanted. That is force, but it's a different kind of force, producer Steve.
It is, and when you were going through the list that we love to refer to that as, and was thinking of mandates, but yes, an Aussie judge quashed the government's decision to cancel his visa, clearing the path for him now to compete in the Australian Open. So it's just kind of something we've been following.
Well, and all reason has gone out the door on this whole thing. Apparently, I think that he's possibly had COVID. I mean, where's that whole antibody discussion going on here? And what's remarkable to me is people that are double vaxxed and boosted are coming down with COVID. And one of the most famous, you just mentioned to me in the pre-call, producer Steve.
Your favorite member of the House of Representatives, not from Colorado, but from New York, the high and not so mighty AOC, tests positive, despite the fact that she's double vaxxed and boosted. And all I can think of is that the liberal left wishes she would sit down and shut up.
Well, right. And didn't she just have a little vacay down to Florida, Freedom, Florida, where she took advantage of the maskless Florida, took advantage of that. And there she was out partying and with a whole bunch of people. And there she tested positive. Interesting, huh?
Hypocrisy is washing over this country like a tidal wave.
It is rather remarkable. And you know what it means, Steve, is if they really believed their rhetoric, then if they really believe that this, and you know, COVID is deadly. It is. But one of the reasons it's been deadly is because they have squashed any of the therapeutics, any of the early treatments. And so, yes, there is that component. And we as individuals need to also take responsibility for our own health as well. I think that actually we've kind of, as a society, we've maybe not taken as good a care of ourselves as we should, because we've always looked at modern medicine and we've looked at, you know, what the miracle of what some of these pharmaceuticals have done. And maybe we've not taken as good a care of ourselves as we should. But if she believed that it was deadly, 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 she would not have been in Florida and would not have been not masked and out with a bunch of people. So she clearly doesn't believe the rhetoric as well, because one of my good friends always reminds me that, Kim, what you need to talk about when we talk about COVID is that 99% plus of people recover that have gotten COVID. And this whole, Steve, this whole thing, testing positive and having COVID are two different things. If we tested everybody for X virus in America, probably most everybody would have X virus. That wouldn't mean that they're sick, but it would mean that they test a positive. And those are two different things, Steve.
They are, and I believe the medical industry, hospital industry, is wising up to that to a degree, because now we're getting like a line of demarcation. Are you here in our ER because of COVID, or are you here for another reason and you just happen to test positive for COVID?
Well, what? We're about 2 years into this now, and it's taken us this long to figure that out, Steve, because it goes against their narrative. But the truth, ultimately, will come out, and that's why it is so important that we, as people that seek truth and look at these issues and look for clarity on them and look at this through this lens of freedom versus force, force versus freedom. That's why it's so important, Steve.
Well, I'm sitting here. You know Mr. Snarky. That's me. What did you say a couple months back? The hardest part about 2 weeks to flatten the curve is the first 2 years?
It's not funny, is it? Hey, before we get into all of this, our AVS show yesterday, America's Veteran Story show yesterday, we had Bill Scott on. And he's written this book, Combat Contrails, Vietnam. And it's a story. He's interviewed 18 different aviators, or I guess it was actually 18 different, I think it was aviators from Vietnam. And interestingly, did you hear the story about a water buffalo that got loose in the back of a cargo plane?
Yeah.
Did you hear that part?
Well, as you remember, we had some issues trying to, you know, make a complete recording that day. But the water buffalo story, I guess I have too vivid an imagination, and I'm just trying to picture the cargo guys in the back trying to keep this water buffalo contained. And obviously, a water buffalo is pretty heavy. And if the plane's not very large, you don't want to be shifting the weight forward or backwards very much, because it can definitely cause some problems to the pilot.
Well, interestingly enough, you remember Matt Mensa, who lives up in Longmont, and he ran for Colorado Senate. And his wife, Tara Mensa, is the head of the Longmont Republican Women. And when Bill mentioned the name, he said Mensa, and I thought, as we were doing the interview, I thought, oh, I wonder if they were related. Well, it was Matt's father, and Tara had actually texted me about that. But I also wanted to let you know, we roll this out in the newsletter, as well as it's on the website now, is Longmont Republican Women, along with the Boulder County Republican Women and the Boulder County Republicans, are hosting a senatorial forum on January 29th. And it's going to be a great event. I'm going to be co-moderating that with Marshall Dawson, who is one of my colleagues from Liberty Toastmasters. But what a small world that the 1,000-pound water buffalo was in Matt Mensa's father's aircraft. What a small world, Steve.
Yeah, I'm getting in another totally different area. I'm getting another lesson of sometimes how small the world can be. So, yeah, you're right.
Do you want to share that, or is that something that's just a comment there?
Oh, well, it's just we're having to do a little search for a new church, and the way the doors are being opened and closed, it turns out that the station manager's admin person is, her and her husband are both very involved at a church that we're considering, and they're rolling out the welcome mat. Let's put it that way.
Oh, that's awesome. Yes, it is a small world. That's why we should always behave ourselves, huh? Okay.
Well, let's not go there.
A couple of things I did want to mention. First of all, I don't know if you've been watching, you know, Joe Rogan. I mean, what a listenership he has. And he has had two of the docs that have been at the forefront really asking the tough questions about COVID and vaccines. And Joe Rogan has had them on his podcast. And people are hearing them that never would have heard them before. That's Dr. McCullough and Dr. Malone. And it's really creating quite a stir, and really pushing back on this narrative. For some of these people, this is the first time that they've heard these guys, and I find it pretty interesting. I've had all kinds of people in my life sending me these podcasts because they'd never heard it before. And here we've been, you know, we've really been watching this for quite some time. So I just wanted to mention that Joe Rogan, he's a really interesting interviewer. And I was talking with somebody the other day. I said, he seems to really ask good questions. But his podcasts are like 3 hours long, Steve, and I don't have that long of an attention span. So I have a little trouble. I guess you just don't listen to the whole thing in one sitting.
I'm sitting here chuckling when you said he's asking the tough questions, only because I am so sick of watching interviews like an NBC, Lester Holt with, I don't know, Fauci or anybody else. And all the questions are so softball. They don't go to the point. They don't get into the nitty gritty. So, yeah, for three cheers for Rogan for asking tough questions.
Okay. And there was one other thing I wanted to talk about, but I think I'm going to move that over to tomorrow because we've got Rob Nadelson in for three segments. And he is a constitutional expert. He's a former constitutional professor. He's with the Independence Institute. I thought he's written a book, The Original Constitution, What It Said and What It Meant. And that's not the exact title, but it's close. So I thought I would go to Clarence Thomas.
Oh, please.
And, you know, he's on the Supreme Court. He's an associate justice of the U.S. Supreme Court. He was nominated by President George H.W. Bush to succeed Thurgood Marshall, and he served since 1991. He's the second Black American to serve on the court. He was born in 1948, and he is an originalist. And this is what he said, and he grew up in Georgia, and this is what he said. He said, "I'd grown up fearing the lynch mobs of the Ku Klux Klan. As an adult, I was starting to wonder if I'd be afraid of the wrong white people all along, where I was being pursued not by bigots in white robes, but by left-wing zealots draped in flowing sanctimony."
Two things. Number one, I want to hang that on the wall, frame it and hang it on the wall. But number two, here's an associate justice of the United States Supreme Court thinking like I would want an associate justice to think. Counterbalance that with what Sotomayor did on Friday with her absolutely absurd statistics she tried to muddy the waters with. Your timing is perfect. You restore my confidence in the Supreme Court.
Don't you wonder what it is like right now with Sotomayor and Thomas, what those discussions should be? I mean, she really, with this, and it's just what she got a bunch of the statistics wrong regarding COVID and vaccines. And my gosh, we really want to trust our Supreme Court that they are looking for truth. And so this is a real problem, Steve.
It is. And then you come to this, what were they doing? Hearing the oral arguments over Biden's mandate stuff. And you know, her statistics it wasn't like they were a little off. They were so bizarre. She just totally, trashed herself in my thinking.
Right. And there's something that we really do want to be able to support our Supreme Court justices. And so it's got to be. And that's why these appointments are so important. And I remember back in 1991, the hearings for Clarence Thomas. And at that particular point in time, I was involved with a professional women's group that didn't really understand at the time that there were many very left-wing people there, that they're real, many of them, they're real, and again, I didn't quite realize this, I had to connect the dots, is their real issue was abortion. And of course, now we look back and we see just what a problem this has been for our country. But I remember in particular one woman who she was just rabid against Clarence Thomas being appointed to the Supreme Court, and I couldn't quite understand that. But the dot I'm trying to connect here is the left that has been very active since the '60s. They have worked very hard to take over our judicial system, and they realized that the appointment of Clarence Thomas was going to be a real problem. And they were right. He's an originalist, and he's been solid regarding the Constitution. The Constitution and justice in America, both of those things should be colorblind. Of course, we see with this particular administration, they want to define everybody by color, putting people into different groups to pit people against each other. That is a real problem here in America. But I have confidence that the American people, that we are going to get through this. I'm excited to talk with Rob Nadelson about that when we get to him in the next segment. Before we do that, though, my shows come to you. I have some great sponsors. One of them is Hooters Restaurants. They have five locations. That's Loveland, Westminster, Aurora, Lone Tree, and Colorado Springs. And they have $10 burger specials, which with inflation, it's great to be able to get together with friends and hold the line on great burgers. And they have all different kinds of burgers there, $10 specials. And so be sure and check that out. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we're going to continue these conversations with Rob Nadelson. He's, again, a constitutional expert. And I have several different questions that I want to ask him. So we'll be right back.
With the federal government printing money, it looks like inflation is on the horizon. That is why you should lock in a low rate now on your mortgage. Lauren Levy with Polygon Financial Group is here to help. Lauren works with a variety of lenders to assist you in finding the mortgage that is just right for you. Locking in a low rate now will save you thousands of dollars over the life of your loan. Don't procrastinate. Don't wait any longer. Call Lauren today at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
And welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That is Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And thank you to all of you who support us. I really do appreciate you. We're an independent voice. We search for truth and clarity, looking at these issues through this lens of freedom versus force, force versus freedom. And we're going to talk with Rob Nadelson this morning. You know him. He's a former constitutional law professor. He's the senior fellow in constitutional jurisprudence at the Independence Institute here in Denver. And he's published in a variety of different places. And right now, the Epoch Times is a place that you'll see a lot of his op-eds. And Rob Nadelson, welcome to the show. It's been a little while, so it's great to have you here.
It has been a little while. It's great to be back, and good morning.
Well, I wanted to jump right into it. You have been busy, and there's a number of things that that we would like to talk about, but you've just written a really interesting piece about our democracy, and we hear this all the time. Our democracy, but we're really a constitutional republic. But it seems those on the left really like to refer to our democracy. And so explain what's going on there.
Well, the distinction between, let me just start by saying this, and this will ruffle the feathers of some conservatives, but I'm telling you the truth. The distinction between democracy and republic really didn't exist to the founders. They used the two terms interchangeably. They would have no problem with us calling our form of government a democracy. The only thing they disapproved of was pure democracy or mobocracy, where there's no rule of law whatsoever. The purported distinction between republic and democracy didn't arise till much after the founding, and it was out of a political dispute, which I could discuss if you want me to. But the particular bone I had to pick in this article was the phrase "our democracy," which the left has picked up and uses interminably in their political discourse and also in their legislation. And what the article does is it points out that their definition of democracy is really akin to the misuse of the term that you saw in the phrase German Democratic Republic, referring to East Germany or the socialist democracy of North Korea, meaning that it's not really democracy. They're very selective as to enforcing the rule of law. Democracy requires enforcement of the rule of law. And as far as they're concerned, some violence is okay, other violence is not. And in various other ways, they demonstrate that our democracy, as they use the term, is not true democracy because they don't support the will of the people. And a great example I gave to that is that the court case which imposed same-sex marriage on the entire country after 30 states had just voted by overwhelming majorities against it. How that is democratic, I don't know. It's not. So the phrase our democracy seems to mean something more like the oligarchy of the left. And it seems to be their little catchphrase to refer to their oligarchy.
Okay, and so when we see Nancy Pelosi get up and say that this is an assault on our democracy, then actually what it is, it's an assault on her power. Would
that's
right.
Yes, that's right. I mean, most recently she's talking about the Capitol riot of January 6th last year. But the left wrote the playbook for that riot. I mean, people tend to forget this, and the media allow us to forget it, but a whole bunch of left-wing demonstrators took over the Capitol building in Madison, Wisconsin in 2011, and did so for several weeks. They occupied the Capitol. And more recently, in 2017, there was an incursion of the Capitol by left-wing demonstrators, the U.S. Capitol, by left-wing demonstrators. About 120 people were arrested. There was also, during that same year, an assault on the U.S. Supreme Court. They came to try to bang the doors down and get into the Supreme Court. They were unable to do that. And then even more recently, in 2018, there was a massive occupation of the U.S. Senate office building by demonstrators, something like 600 were arrested then. In fact, one of my colleagues at the Independence Institute, Ben Murray, was working for Senator Ted Cruz at that time, and he said that people had never seen anything like it. One U.S. senator was essentially held prisoner by the demonstrators, and the others had to lock their offices in self-protection. Now, that is, to my view, certainly of the same quality as the Capitol riot. But that was done by left-wing crowds, and Nancy Pelosi never called it an assault on our democracy. So from that, I conclude that their version of our democracy has nothing to do with the even-handed standards required in real democracy. It's really just about their power, as you say.
But they use this term on a consistent basis. And, for example, they're talking about this January 6th event of last year as an assault on our democracy. And yeah, I think it probably was. But I think that the truth is going to continue to come out because I think that the truth is going to come out in maybe a different way. They're trying to put this narrative a certain way. But I honestly think that there's still more to learn about this, Rob. I know. I may be talking a little bit in circles, but I really think that as I've seen more and more video, and I really thought that this video, and I mentioned this last week, really told it all. Remember Horn Man, the guy without the shirt and the horns on his head, was watching one of the evening shows last week, and this guy's walking into the chambers, you know, the where, I mean, first of all, if we can't, as a United States of America, keep a shirtless horned guy out of you know, the middle of our capital, then we've got some real security challenges, I think. But as I looked at the video, he's walking in. There's one Capitol Hill police officer walking behind him. You know, there's no group of officers trying to keep him out. It's almost like they escorted him in. I thought that video was very telling, Rob. I don't know if you saw that or not.
I didn't see the video, but I understand what you're talking about. It's clear that the response of the Capitol Police was very uneven. I mean, it was all you see some of them sort of waving people in, and then by contrast, Ashley Babbitt was shot. you know, for trying to enter. So it's unclear what their policy was, if there really was a policy. I would remind people that the Capitol Police are under the control of the House and Senate leadership, and that would be Schumer and Nancy Pelosi. And so if there were law enforcement issues that day, ultimately the buck stops with them. But there are a whole lot of other questions we don't know. There's still a lot of videotape that hasn't been seen. There's also the issue of people who are still rotting in jail over a year later without bail. If a petty criminal or a left-wing demonstrator were in that position, the American Civil Liberties Union and every other left-wing civil liberties group in the country would be out there screaming, and we'd have the case up at the Supreme Court now. But because these were Trump demonstrators, apparently they're simply allowed to rot in jail without bond. This is another example of what, quote, our democracy means. It's an appalling, absolutely appalling situation. And congressmen who have tried to get clarity on what's going on, have tried to visit the facilities, have had only uneven success. So that tells me that, quote, our democracy is not just about oligarchy. It's about authoritarianism. It's really a scary situation.
Well, it really is. And I just wanted to, in this first segment that we're talking with Rob Nadelson, talk about our democracy. How would you like to button this up? We're going to go to break here in just a minute. We've got Marlon Kirsch on the line. What would be your final thought on this whole our democracy thing, Rob Nadelson?
Well, the one thing that there's never any scarcity of is political hypocrisy. I mean, hypocrisy is part of the currency of the realm of politics. And it underscores the need for Americans to be very skeptical of their politicians. The founders said that eternal vigilance is the price of liberty, and that's been proven again and again. Power corrupts, and we must always be very skeptical of what political leaders are telling us, even though we'd love to be able to believe them uncritically.
Right. And that's why we do this show, is to continue to bring truth and clarity to these issues. So, Rob, we're going to go to break. Before we do that, though, Marlon Kirsch is a great sponsor of the show. Kirsch Insurance Group, they're specialists in the Medicare arena, and they work with a lot of different companies so that they can make sure they can help you get the right plan for you. And Marlon Kirsch, welcome to the show.
All right, Kim, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Marlon, I always say when I'm doing these, or not always, but many times I say when I'm doing the live reads, is government gets involved, things are clear as mud to me. And that is why it's so important that the Kirsch Insurance Group is there to help people with this whole Medicare thing. And a lot of baby boomers are going to turn 65 this year. They don't know what to do. I know there's this time right now that people can make changes on their open enrollment period for their Medicare Advantage. Is that what it is? Again, it's clear as mud to me. Marlon, explain it.
Yes. Well, Medicare has numerous what we call open enrollment or annual enrollment periods where people can make changes to their Medicare plan. And right now, from January 1st through March, we are in what we call an open enrollment period where people with Advantage plans can change to another Advantage plan, or they can come back to original Medicare. Now, people during the annual enrollment period, which was, as we talked, in October, November, had that opportunity. But a lot of times people, you know, they don't take a look at their plans, and here we are in January, and they have another opportunity. And they should look, because there are some new products out that are really terrific. I mean, products that have no copays for specialists and just products that I think make a lot of sense. And I just encourage people to call us, and we're happy to take them through and see if that makes sense for them.
Well, and it doesn't cost anybody, doesn't cost people anything to do this, to do that initial plan. Or I guess it doesn't cost anything, really, when they work with you. You work with a lot of the different companies. So it's like no harm, no foul on this, Marlon.
No, that's true. I mean, we are a broker. We work with most of the carriers in Colorado. We do not charge for our services because we work with insurance companies who compensate us. So from a consumer point of view, there's just no reason why they shouldn't be out there looking for the best plan that fits their needs.
Okay, and so the best way to reach you is your website has all of the contact information, and that's iKirsch, that's KIRSCH.com, iKirsch.com. What's your final thought for our listeners today, Marlon?
Well, again, my final thought would be to just be sure you're on the best plan. I mean, these Advantage plans have improved a lot over the past several years. There are some outstanding ones for 2022. And if you haven't taken the time, then just take a few minutes, make a phone call, and see if something would fit your needs. That's what I would tell people.
And again, you can find them at iKirsch.com. That's iKirsch.com. Marlon, thanks so much. We'll talk to you again very soon.
Hey, thank you much, Kim. I appreciate it. You have a nice day.
Okay, thanks so much. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with constitutional expert. That is Rob Nadelson. Stay tuned.
Home ownership and private property rights help you build wealth for you and your family. RE/MAX Alliance award-winning realtor Karen Levine understands this. Supply is super tight right now. This is why you need a seasoned professional with excellent negotiating skills on your side of the table, whether buying or selling an existing home or buying a new build. As a member of the National Association of Realtors Board of Directors, Karen Levine volunteers hours of her time to help you build your American dream. Call her today at 303-877-7516. Again, that's 303-877-7516.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
And welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That is Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. Thank you to all of you who support us. I greatly appreciate it. On the line with us is Rob Nadelson. He's a former constitutional law professor. He's the senior fellow in constitutional jurisprudence at the Independence Institute in Denver. He's an author. And Rob, before we jump into the next question, just tell us a little bit about your book, The Original Constitution. I have it kind of in my brain what it said and what it really meant, or what's the actual title on that?
The actual title is the original Constitution, what it actually said and meant. We had a record sales year
awesome.
I was really amazed to see the figures when they came in the other day. What it is an objective summary of what the United States Constitution meant right after the adoption of the Bill of Rights. It's not a conservative book or a liberal book. It's simply a statement of what the Constitution was when the Bill of Rights was adopted in 1791. If you had gone to court in those days, or if you had sought legal advice as to what a provision of the Constitution meant, this book would tell you what that is. It does not go into the many changes that have been made by the courts over the years. Maybe that'll be the subject of a later book.
Oh, that, and congratulations on that. People, I think, are hungry for truth, Rob. And they can get the book where at? Just across all the different places where people can buy books? Where's the best place?
The two most prominent would be Barnes & Noble. That is through their website, barnesandnoble.com, or amazon.com, either one.
Okay, great.
Be sure you get the third edition. I've noticed that Amazon in particular, for some reason, has still got the second edition for sale, and it shouldn't, but it does.
Okay, the third edition. So with that, this is going to be a big year, I think, for the Supreme Court. And tell us about the whole Roe v. Wade question. I know that people are getting pretty whipped up that the Supreme Court may take a look at this, or I guess they are going to take a look at this. So where is that at exactly?
Okay, well, one of your mottos, I guess, is truth and clarity. And this is one of those areas where those two goals conflict, because the truth is not terribly clear. So for those folks who are not familiar with the background, part of the Constitution is the 14th Amendment, which says that states may not deprive anyone of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. And what that really means is that when states prosecute you, either criminally or civilly, they can't make up the rules as they go along. However, beginning a century ago, the U.S. Supreme Court began to interpret that, and I'm using the word interpret advisedly, very, very broadly, to say that not only does the state have to treat you fairly when it proceeds against you, but there are certain things that the state cannot do, period. And in 1973, the U.S. Supreme Court said one of the things the state cannot do entirely is to impose too many restrictions on abortion. That has been controversial ever since because, well, for many reasons, it's a very deeply fought issue. Many people have moral views on the subject. And there's nothing in the Constitution about abortion. This is simply the Supreme Court's kind of reinvention of this 14th Amendment provision against depriving liberty without due process of law. So over many years, Republicans and conservatives have started a project, have carried out a project whereby they want to get justices onto the Supreme Court who will reverse Roe versus Wade. And over the last 50 years, they've been engaged in this. Republican candidates have run for president on the basis that they will appoint justices who will reverse Roe versus Wade or otherwise be, quote, conservative, end quote. And the project has thus far been a spectacular failure. Roe versus Wade was largely reaffirmed by the U.S. Supreme Court in 1992. Efforts to amend the Constitution to restore the ability of the states to regulate in this area were frightened off by establishment figures who said that if we had a convention to amend the Constitution, the entire Constitution would be open for change, which is a lie, but they said it anyway. That scared people away. And the result is that by Supreme Court mandate, abortion still remains legal nationwide. The speculation now is that going to change? Both the media and many establishment Republicans are claiming that there's a, quote, 6-3 majority on the Supreme Court. That is an absolutely erroneous characterization of the situation. I think there may be 3, perhaps 4 votes to overrule Roe versus Wade. Whether there were 5, that is a majority, remains a matter of doubt.
Rob, as I have watched this whole thing, 1973 is when, again, the Supreme Court made the Roe v. Wade decision and basically legalized abortion. And a couple of things. I mean, so much has happened between then and now. Now we have new medical technology where we're doing the ultrasound, yeah. where we actually can see the baby. We actually see that it is a baby. It's not just a clump of tissue. Young people have seen that picture on their refrigerators before the baby's born. So there's a shift in what it really is exactly. But as I look at the vision of America, the idea that all men are created equal with these rights from God of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, which is the bedrock of the American idea. And when we as a society don't protect the life of little ones, of babies, then I think that we're in a very dangerous time. And so I've talked with libertarians about that say that, hey, I don't want to get into that question because the woman has this right. But there's also, I think, the right, the life of the baby. And I know that that's the tough question on it, but that's really the American idea. But I've also talked with people, I've talked with conservatives over the years that have said, you know, it's not my decision, but I don't want government money used to pay for that. And that also seems like a place that we should not be using government money in that arena. What's your thoughts on those things, Rob?
Well, this is a good example where truth tends to collide with clarity.
Okay.
There's another value involved, too, and that is that this was supposed to be a matter of state policy, not a federal policy. And making it a matter of federal policy has done enormous damage to the political fabric. You mentioned earlier the vicious fight over the nomination of Clarence Thomas, which centered at least ostensibly on the issue of abortion. I actually think it more fundamentally centered on the scope of federal power. But I think we can come to that when we talk about vaccinations. But there is also the important American value, which is called decentralization or federalism, which is that we make these decisions closer to home, that states that decide that abortion should be legal can do that, and that states that decide that it should be illegal can do that too. Now, as to the issue of who has the choice, my right to control my hands ends where your neck begins, right?
Right.
I can put my hands together, but I can't do it if your neck is in the middle of it. So, and why is that? That's because even libertarians recognize, especially libertarians recognize, that my right to act is qualified by your own liberty. So the question regarding abortion tends to focus on whether the unborn child is in fact a human being. And I mean, there are a few people who will say, yeah, it's a human being, kill it anyway. But there are not very many people like that.
Right.
If people are reassured that it's a human being, then they tend to be anti-abortion or pro-life. And that's where the sonograms have come in. They tend to humanize the child by making us enabling us to see the child in the same way that Harriet Beecher Stowe's great novel, Uncle Tom's Cabin, humanized the slave and therefore made it easier for people to be against slavery. My own view is that, yeah, it is a child, probably from what, if not from conception, then from the what's called the three-cell stage, and ought to be protected. But as a constitutional scholar, at putting my own pro-life or anti-abortion views aside, I say under the Constitution, this really needs to be decided at the state level until there is a federal consensus on the issue. There may eventually be a true consensus. And when there is, we can pass a constitutional amendment eliminating abortion. But until that time and for the foreseeable future, the people have the right to have this matter judged closer to home in their state capitals. We need to get this out of Washington, D.C. and away from all those special interests that have poisoned our national political life.
So do you think that might be the decision that the Supreme Court, I know it's a crystal ball question, but do you think that might be the decision they might make regarding Roe v. Wade?
It might be. It might not be. I mean, I go through the votes and I say there's only one justice even now on the court who's a true originalist, meaning somebody who believes that the Constitution ought to be applied like any other legal documents applied. And that's Clarence Thomas, and I think he will almost certainly vote to overrule Roe versus Wade if he thinks that the case is proper to do so. He may say that there are other issues like standing that would interfere, but I think he would vote to overrule. I think Justice Alito is a probable vote in that direction, and I think that Justice Gorsuch is also a probable vote in that direction, although with a little less high level of probability. Justice Kavanaugh is much less reliable on these originalist type issues, but I think on Roe versus Wade, I think he tends to say that was a bad foray for the U.S. Supreme Court. Among the other five, you've got three definite liberal activists, Breyer, Sotomayor, and Kagan, who will certainly vote to sustain Roe. I mean, they've already signaled that they will do that. And that leaves Amy Coney Barrett and John Roberts. And I inclined to guess that Roberts will try to find some formula that enables him to avoid overruling Roe, maybe narrowing it a little bit. And Amy Coney Barrett, you know, she's proven to be very different from what many conservatives thought she would be.
Right.
And
right.
Not me. I mean, I was skeptical. But where she is on this, I don't know. There's no question that she personally opposes abortion. But when you live and work inside the Beltway, it takes real fortitude to overcome the the consensus in the Beltway, which, of course, is very pro-abortion.
Wow, it's very interesting. Before we go to break, I do want to make sure that people realize Colorado is one of the most aggressive states in the nation, and if not in the world, regarding abortion. And in Colorado,
yes,
you can actually abort the baby right up until the moment of birth. And a lot of people
didn't realize that's not going to change.
Even if
Roe versus Wade is overruled, it's going to be a matter of state policy. And Colorado's abortion policies will remain extremely liberal.
Extremely. And I think a lot of people didn't realize that. Reggie Carr, who has the I'm a Uniter show here on KLZ on Friday mornings, had a caller that called in and explained that. And Reggie's like, that's impossible. I mean, people don't realize that is what actually can occur here in Colorado. So, Rob Nadelson, the time goes way too quickly. I'm looking at the clock. We need to go to break. When we come back, I want to get your take on these vaccine mandates at the Supreme Court as well. Before we do that, though, Castlegate Knife and Tool is another great sponsor of the show. They are a family-owned business. They are located right here in Sedalia, Colorado, and they have knives from the best blade makers from throughout the world. I was at a wedding this weekend and was just really pleased to give a beautiful knife for their kitchen because good knives are great in the kitchen and a great place to get your wedding gift. So again, that's Castlegate.com. Castlegate.com. We'll be right back with Rob Nadelson.
Three Points Financial is a fiduciary financial planning company focused on helping individuals and families. Mary Alpers and Steve Kruse at Three Points Financial specialize in investment strategies, tax planning and preparation, and retirement planning with no product sales or commissions. Tax laws have changed and will continue to change. Inflation is real. Three Points Financial helps you maneuver through these changes to achieve your financial success. For clarity and a solid, relevant financial and investment plan, while working with a company that puts your interests at the forefront, schedule a no-obligation initial consultation at threepointsfinancial.com. That's threepointsfinancial.com.
Would you have ever dreamed that freedom of speech, freedom of thought, freedom of assembly, and freedom of religion would be under assault and attack in America? Unbelievably, it is happening right before our eyes. That is why it is important to keep free-thinking, independent voices on the airwaves, the internet, and social media. Kim Munson is one of those important voices. Help her keep independence alive. Go to KimMunson.com to contribute to join Kim in the battle of ideas raging in America today. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Thank you for joining us. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter. And you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And thank you to all of you who support us. On the line with me is Rob Nadelson. He's a former constitutional law professor, senior fellow in constitutional jurisprudence at the Independence Institute here in Denver. And he is the author of The Original Constitution, What It Said and What It Meant. That's close, I know, on that. And congratulations.
What it actually said and meant.
And you said this last year was record sales. People are hungry to know. They're searching for truth, Rob. And I'm just so excited that you had such a great year with that. And you're recommending that people make sure that they get the third edition on that when they buy it.
Yes, that's the blue and white edition. If it's not blue and white, then it's an older edition and don't buy it.
You want the latest, greatest from Rob Nadelson. With that, Rob Nadelson, vaccine mandates. Producer Steve and I always comment that the most difficult thing about the 2 weeks to flatten the curve is the first 2 years. But here we are almost 2 years in on COVID. And it takes a while for our system to work. We've seen the mandates. We saw the really heavy, tyrannical hand of these health departments. And it's been so interesting, like even with Polis, that he says that he's trying to look more libertarian and make comments to that effect. But yet the heavy hand of his bureaucracies are still out there. So some of these things are getting to the Supreme Court. What's your take on this?
Well, this is another area where your goals of truth and clarity sometimes conflict. You have to keep in mind when discussing these mandates that there's a fundamental difference between a mandate imposed at the state and local level on the one side and one imposed at the federal level on the other. Traditionally, the states have very broad health care policies. They're called police powers, an older use of the word police. And so many of the draconian policies, the very severe policies that Governor Polis and others imposed, whether they were a good idea or not, were in fact within their power. Whether Joe Biden has the policy to impose vaccination mandates is quite a different issue. Let me just say, though, before we go to the Supreme Court case, one thing that I hope we have learned from our experience here in Colorado is that we should not allow unelected officials to impose open-ended, extensive health care orders, such as they did in the case of COVID. It's one thing if Jared Polis imposes them. If Governor Polis imposes them, he can be held responsible for that at the polls. But when unelected bureaucrats do it, you know, there's no way really to hold them responsible. And so, other than what Douglas County did, which was withdraw from Tri-County. So I really think that the law here in Colorado needs to be amended so that any of these orders that are imposed by local government have an automatic termination date, maybe a 60-day termination date, unless they're extended by elected officials, that is to say, by county commissioners or by the governor. So that's the point I wanted to make about state and local mandates. One other thing, which is important because it's relevant to abortion, the right to abortion comes out of what the Supreme Court calls its rights of privacy and of bodily integrity and personal autonomy. Those rights of privacy, personal autonomy, and so forth have taken a real beating during the pandemic. I mean, despite all the rhetoric about how people, you know, have a right to control what goes into their own body, when it came to vaccinations, nobody seemed to be interested in enforcing those purported rights. So that raises some real interesting issues. But the vaccination issue at the federal level now, that's quite a different one, and I'd be happy to explore that with you.
Okay, we've got probably about 3 minutes, so let's jump into that.
Well, not much time to explore. There are three vaccination mandates issued by the Biden administration. One is imposed on all employers of more than 100 employees or not. That is going to go to the Supreme Court. The most of the courts have found that that's invalid, mostly because it violates federal statutes. I think it violates the U.S. Constitution, but the U.S. Supreme Court will decide that issue. The second one is imposed on federal contractors and subcontractors, requiring all their employees to be vaccinated. That's currently on hold. The majority of courts have said that's not valid, mostly because it exceeds federal statute. That also is going to the U.S. Supreme Court. And then there is one that is imposed upon healthcare workers in facilities that receive Medicare and Medicaid dollars. That is, I think, in a mixed situation also right now, and that's also going to go to the U.S. Supreme Court. Despite all the blather about there being a 6-3 conservative majority, which is really deceptive and not really true, this court has not been very staunch about defending against federal excess. And it's a very good chance that one or all three of these mandates will survive the court as a result. But once again, nobody really knows.
Wow. What I see as you're talking about this is really a tyrannical overreach. Now, it's at the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court's supposed to be really kind of the backstop for our freedoms here. But we're 2 years into this now, and it seems to me like the wheels are coming off the bus on this vaccine narrative, because I know people that are double vaxxed and boosted that are still getting COVID. And somehow I think people are starting to say, wait a minute, this doesn't match up. What's your final thought on all this, Rob?
Yeah, That's actually very dramatic. There's a U.S. Supreme Court case which was decided in 1905, which upheld vaccinations against smallpox, which everybody cites and says, well, you know, vaccination mandates are fine. Of course, that case didn't apply to a federal mandate. It was only a local mandate. So that's one big difference. But the other thing is the smallpox vaccine had a century of trial and positive experience. It was not harmful and it worked. And one of the difficulties with applying that same rule to COVID is that we really have a very different situation. We don't know the extent to which the vaccines work. As you said, the wheels seem to be coming off. And also, we don't know the long-term side effects. So I'm certainly not anti-vaccination. I've been vaccinated myself against COVID. But I think there's a big, big leap from saying that people should be vaccinated against, let's say, smallpox or polio to requiring them to be vaccinated against COVID. I think we need to be much more skeptical about that, and I hope the courts are much more skeptical about it. Thus far, they have really not been.
Well, it is. We're in a remarkable time on this, Rob Nadelson. But the thing about smallpox and polio vaccines is once you got them, you typically, hardly anybody got smallpox and polio. And here we have all kinds of breakthrough cases. Rob Nadelson, it goes way too quickly. But thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's been great to be with you.
And again, Rob Nadelson, I really appreciate his take on all of this. Our quote for today is from our originalist Supreme Court Justice, and that is Clarence Thomas. He said, government cannot make us equal. It can only recognize, respect, and protect us as equal before the law. So my friends today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. My friends, you are not alone. God bless you, and God bless America. And I don't want no one to cry.